Okay. Are we on back there? We're on. We are on. I see us on the screen. Okay, welcome to the Plan and Zone Commission meeting for February 18th, 2015. May I have the roll call, please?
Bennett?
Here.
Burt?
Here.
Kapler?
Here.
Peters?
Here.
Rafferty? Stoltenberg?
Here.
Wendland?
Here. Okay, we had minutes from the last meeting. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the minutes of January 21st, 2015.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve the minutes from the last meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes from the last meeting are approved. So again, welcome to the Plan and Zone Commission meeting for Wednesday, February 18th, 2015. We are a recommending body appointed by the City Council to review appropriate matters relative to plan and zone. Thank you for attending tonight. If you have a particular case that is of interest to you, when we get to that point, I will ask you to step to the podium that is at my right and your left back there and state your name and interest in a particular case. So with that, Greg, we will begin.
Mr. Chairman, the first case that we have tonight regards a land use change and a rezoning of the drive easterly.
If you were to drive easterly along 53rd Avenue, come Northridge Circle, and then there'd be Charles Court, and then Kilt Court. Essentially, what we're looking at is changing the land use to a traditional residential status so that there might be a PR3 overlay district placed along what is Highland's third edition here. Essentially, you've got people wanting to make a transition from office transitional zoning C5 to an R3 type status so as to remove any commercial uses from this location. They don't want to have to go through legal proceedings every time someone tries to operate a business out of this locale. So they're going to a PR3 overlay district to address all of the non-conforming setbacks as shown on here. The ones in red are the rear yard non-conforming, the ones in yellow are side yard, and then the ones in green are the front yard setbacks. This is what the Highlands third edition was when it was under C5 zoning. Essentially, this is what got platted, and the setbacks at the time would be 20 feet in front, separation on the side yards of 6 feet, and then a 20-foot setback in back. And as I mentioned, there are some non-conforming. There are plenty of these that are conforming, though, to an R3 standard. If you go to the R3 zoning, essentially what you're looking at is a 25-foot yard setback for the front yard. For the side yard, you're looking at a 5-foot minimum with a potential for, with the combined side yard being 15 feet. And then the rear yard, you're looking at essentially a 25-foot setback. So by putting it into a PR3 overlay district, there are exceptions that can be made for each one of those classifications so that you do not have that requirement. And that's essentially what we're looking at here, is trying to make this site conforming, and at the same time we're trying to remove those business uses that have been found, undertaken by certain residents within that area. So we're trying to make this more residential. This is a holdover too, you have to remember, from the C5 zoning. We remove these uses and we don't acknowledge any platting of residential within those boundaries of C5 after September of 2006. So we're trying to make this thing as coming with the best outcome as possible, to identify these non-conforming uses and to put them into some type of district where the individuals owning the property are not being hit with non-conformities. So with that, staff would recommend approval of the land use change as well as the zoning change. Are there any questions?
One, and maybe it's more administrative, Greg, but it looks like there's two different applicants. One is Highlands Homeowners Edition, third edition, Homeowners Association third edition, and the other is Highlands Villas. Are they one and the
same? They're pretty much, it's an ownership group. It's the homeowners organization, and they petitioned as a group to change both.
And so we have something evidencing that this group has gotten together and they're all
yes.
In support of it. Okay. Other questions from the commission? And just so I'm understanding the practical impact of not doing this, today when you say the impacts of nonconformance, what are they experiencing
today? If this were to occur in some instances when lenders have made contact with me and insurers, the nonconformity can affect the way the property is conveyed. In some cases, some lenders will not put a loan on the property, and this has happened before. And in order to make the title free and clear as possible, this way it can be done at once. The zoning will be recorded at the courthouse with the conditions that are being removed, essentially, and that way there will be conformity for all of these lot owners. And at the same time, again, we take out the potential for any commercial type uses taking place on site.
It's all built out, Greg, except for that one. It's where it says C5 to PR3
this,
right
this
there.
This is an outlot, yeah.
That's a detention pond.
That's the detention pond. There's quite a grade there. Okay. All right. And sorry, anyone in the commission?
I guess I have a general question, not about this specific request, but if this is an issue here, is there potentially an issue as you follow 53rd to the west with other parcels?
There may, well, I think we did identify the area to the south and east of 53rd and Middle Road, and those properties were all conforming, and they already did petition us about 2009 to have an R3 status placed upon their property, and they were able to do so because they met all the requirements. If anybody else were to come to us, it depends on that situation again. What's conforming, what isn't. We don't want to place somebody in a non-conforming position because then conveying the property is going to be an issue, and that issue in some cases may outweigh that change to eradicate, I guess, any type of C5 commercial influences.
And what about undeveloped?
There is probably about one parcel that I'm aware of that would still be available that was already platted. It can be replatted because we've already told the developer that, and that's just above Lindquist Ford in that area. Goodyear Tire, there might be one lot left that could be subdivided into townhouse use.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Anyone in the audience with regard to this case? Seeing none, I would return to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move we approve case number 15-014, subject to staff recommendations.
A second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case 15014, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. 15014 is approved.
And I'll be happy to make a motion for 15-007, which is the same parcel, subject to recommendations from staff.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case 15007, which is the zoning classification change to PR3 overlay district, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 15007 is approved as well. Thanks. Greg.
Our next case, Mr. Chairman, involves an area that is pretty much just, this is the site we just discussed. This area is just due east, and you can approach it by driving up here. This is the area right here, which would be the Lodges of Beaver Meadows, third edition, that's been proposed by the developer. And essentially what we're looking at is the remaining portion of this preliminary plat that is being proposed for development to be subdivided, excuse me, into 25 different lots. Staff in reviewing this thought it met all of our requirements, and the sewer issue for storm sewer was identified, and that the construction plans met with our requirements. We would ask, however, that this name, 56th Avenue, be stricken and that an alphabetic name be placed at this location due to the fact that there are two street segments elsewhere named 56th Avenue, and we do not want any more dislocation of that name, I guess is the way we could put it. Also, you have a letter, Mr. Chairman. One of the lot owners adjoining this subdivision to the north has indicated issues with stormwater. He wants to make sure that the water does drain correctly and then into the detention basin here that the city owns. And at the same time, he wants to make sure that a berm is not built. If it is built, that it does one thing and one thing only, and that is to convey the water to this locale. And I believe he's mentioned that in two different regards. And then I think his third point is was there a requirement to put in a berm to channel that water to this detention area? So those are the three issues that he's facing, and we'll try to get back to him on those issues. But that's part of the record, I guess, is that letter.
Yeah, and I've got it here, Greg. And is the developer here tonight? I don't see him. Because I'd kind of like to have him address the question since the neighbor was unable. And let me, for the record, it's Harlan Briggs, 4209 Nevada Drive, who sent the letter in dated 2/14. And he advised that he was unable to attend the meeting and requested that these concerns and questions be addressed at the meeting. It's a little hard to read, so bear with me for a minute. Given that the property owner has regraded to accommodate and develop walkout lots, will the redirected watershed runoff be contained on the developer's property until discharge to public streams? And are we able to conclusively agree and say that is the case?
Yes, that is the case.
Okay, great. Second, is the berm that is placed on this development behind my property, excuse me, to be permanently a part of this development to control the watershed runoff within the development?
I'd want to see where he's located on there in relation to the plat, I guess.
And I don't know. All I know is it's 4209 Nevada.
So he's going to be over here in one of these lots.
Okay. There is a berm that extends along the north side of the third addition, and it connects with the Highlands East addition there that Greg just circled. There is a natural berm there. I don't believe there was any plans to remove that. I don't know if we've got the grading plan in here. Yeah, I have the plat or the preliminary plat in front of me here with the grading plan, and it doesn't show that being removed. We can certainly check on that and make sure, but I don't think there was any plans to remove that berm.
Okay, great. And then the third item, is this berm behind my property a legal provision of the development requiring it to remain, similar question apparently, in place by subsequent property owners? So does it run with the land, the plat? Concerning the short timeline, 3 days of this meeting notification of my being out of town, I request a written response, and my request would be of staff to give them a follow-up, and then of course it's on the record and available on video as well. So
we could take care of that.
Right, appreciate it. Okay. Anyone on the commission have any questions with regard to this case? Anyone in the audience with regard to this case?
I have just a general question.
Yeah.
Why, when we're renaming 56th Avenue, why don't we just use Integrity Way since it seems to be the same street? There's a reason for that, I assume.
There's a range of addresses, and what we get is the serpentine addressing system, which violates what we're supposed to do, which is east, west, north, south. And we do have an ordinance that says our addresses should run in a grid pattern, if at all possible, and also they should be in ascending order from south to north, and then from west to east in ascending order.
Okay. Thank you.
No one in the audience? I'll come back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we approve case number 15-008, subject to your request for notification and communication with the homeowner who submitted a letter to us.
And the staff recommendations.
And the staff recommendations.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case 15-008. Subject to the request to communicate with the adjacent homeowner and staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. 15-008 is approved. Greg?
Mr. Chairman, the next one before us is a dual set of cases. One is a site plan for this location, and another is a final plat, and I'll just read the descriptions both together. We've looked at this prior, this property, and again, it's another area that is right nearby the projects we've discussed. We've got, again, the property we looked at for rezoning here, and then further north here, we have the lodges at Beaver Meadows Third. For this, we have Everest Summit as a site plan and final plat, and the area outlined here in the green is essentially where we're looking. And we do have a 100-year floodplain that does meander through this parcel. It is zone multifamily R5. The preliminary plat was already approved by City Council and has been through this body. And we see the outline, the terrain, and the steepness of some of the areas here. And then the area for stormwater detention right there, entry point off of 53rd, and then cul-de-sac down in this area. And then we see Hopewell Creek that meanders all the way through here. This is a view of the area, and it has been graded now. There's a southern boundary if one were to walk out to the northeastmost point of Crow Creek Park and take a look. They would see that this area over here, that a great deal of the landscaping has been removed, and if you were to approach it from the north and look back in this area, all the way back, you can see at the tree line, except for the trees around Hopewell Creek here, pretty much all that's been taken out already, and all of that landscaping removed. So the developer is attempting to get the site as ready as possible for spring building. There are 42 different lots shown on the final plat, and then the area here, there's a conservation area that's set aside here on final plat. We've got another outlot designated for usage for stormwater detention, and then another outlot over here that's used additionally for snow storage, and then as well provisions in an agreement that we have signed with the developer will allow snow storage along portions of the right-of-way that are not part of the paving of Pandit Drive, and that's something as well. Another thing we want to make sure of too is that as a condition on this, that the notes are on the plat. I place these on this plat, but we want to make sure that the notes are on the plat that is going to be signed and recorded down at the Scott County Recorder's Office. The site plan is rather large, so we've got it in two pieces. This is the northerly portion, and your entryway coming in off of 53rd to make a right-hand turn or going this direction, come on in. Is at the northernmost point. We've got the beginnings of the detention basin right in this area, with water being conveyed into the detention basin from here, and then some of these areas here. There are two areas of meant for turnarounds, fire truck turnaround right here. And as we go over here, we see that again, there's another turnaround area right here for the fire truck, so there are two of those. Water will be channeled and taken down this direction and then taken into the detention basin. And then the outlet for the detention basin is here going into Hopewell Creek. And as you can see, all of the units are situated around the street. And then everything is graded specifically for the site. And there are also other issues in the agreement regarding the topography and the geo evaluation by engineers, and that will be handled by our engineering and building departments evaluating those things as building permits come due. Staff, in looking at this, would support the petitioner's request for approval of both the final plat and the site plan. I would ask, are there any questions? And these are examples of the elevations. These will be done in a six-plex manner, though. So what you see here will be times three.
I didn't quite
except
follow
that. Except maybe the addition of two more added on, I guess.
So from a practical standpoint, I see how the four flow, four garages. So where do the extra two go onto this to make it a sixplex then?
It's just, you just probably add on over here. There's something that would just be one like this right here. Just cut this in half and add that half on, essentially.
And so the door would be adjacent to the overhead door, and then the
that's going to face out towards the street, of course.
Okay. Questions from the commission?
I have a few questions. You talked about, Greg, conveying stormwater to the detention area. Is that conveyed above the ground or under the ground?
It will be on the paving, essentially, and then anything that would, of course, have sheet flow back would also go into this area, but this is the main entry for this area right here for the stormwater. So it'd come from the cul-de-sac and then make its way toward the grate that is right here. And there's also a series of intakes. These are the two intake areas. And then by means of an easement and then what is piping, it would be taken here. For the northern portion, you have intakes, I believe, right in this area. Or should not, it's the sanitary. You have intakes right here at the beginning. And I believe also that there is a sewer intake right at this point, if right there. And then that would take the water into the detention area right here. So you're taking everything off the street that occurs. The other water will sheet flow back. I believe it's graded to take the water back into this detention basin. And then it will be released at the 5-year release rate, I believe.
Okay.
From here. So it's either sheet flowing into the detention basin or it's being collected off the street.
Who maintains that then?
That's going to be the homeowners association. It's not going to be the city.
So sticks and debris and keeping those open and flowing is an HOA.
That's their responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Erosion in the back as the water.
And that's, again, is something that they're going to have to be aware of as the meander in this creek,
right,
and keeping an eye on it. And it's, unless somebody else says something, it's going to be in their ballpark. It's going to be their dime.
I did have one other question, Mr. Chairman. Greg, can you go back? Well, this shows the topography. You talked about the fact that there's an agreement with the city to allow the homeowners access to some of the land along the east side of that road of Pandit Drive for snow. But from the topography here, it looks to me like that's pretty steep there.
I believe that's going to be partially graded. I think Mr. Freeze might have details on that.
Yeah, they're going to leave, I believe there's a 10-foot buffer from the back of curb, and they'll grade that at no greater than, I think it was 6%. I'm not exactly sure the grade, but enough to allow for some snow storage there. Because that was obviously a major concern.
So the snow from all the driveways and all of the street.
I know they do have a snow storage area,
right,
over there that Greg's pointing to. So those two areas are the designated areas for snow.
And I know we talked about this before, but just to refresh my memory, all of that snow removal is the responsibility of the city, the homeowners association.
I can reply to that. The city will come through and make one pass. They'll come in, go around the cul-de-sac, come back and make a pass out to 53rd. They're going to try to take the lion's share of the snow to the best of their ability to the eastern part of the property where we have the extra right-of-way. The agreement says the homeowners association has responsibility of clearing the driveways and not pushing it back out in the street. So that's why the snow storage area at the end of the cul-de-sac was created, so they had some area to deposit that snow.
Will the homes be under a master snow removal agreement then, so they're all participating, or each one on their own?
Homeowners Association.
Will cover each individual, so nobody has their own control of snow removal. Good answer. And then from a practical standpoint, can they park down there? Greg, where you had a green, is that a parking area? So in the summer, can that be parked on or whatever?
What, this here?
Yeah.
No, this is just an easement for access that comes right around here and then permits them to come out in this slab and push the snow out here so it will can be placed downhill. That is not meant at all for any type of parking or storage other than to push snow in that area.
And it's not our job under this agreement to put the snow in that storage area there off the cul-de-sac?
No, it is not.
Okay. The width of that easement then, Brian, for the snow, you said it was about 10 feet, you think?
Yeah, on the east side there, yes.
Craig, is that hatched area on the plat, the anticipated buildable area?
Where are you looking?
There's a line. Looks like some sort of rear setback line, although on the long lots, it's moved up quite a bit.
You mean here?
And that area is hatched. It's a very faint hatch.
No, it's
on each lot. There's a... Can you see it?
You mean here, or...?
Yes.
Yeah. The area that's going to be built is right about in between these two lines. This is where these units will be placed.
Yeah, she's seeing those faint diagonal hash lines that are in there, and that's the building print?
Yes.
Buildable print, I guess? Okay. Anyone else on the commission? Anyone in the audience with regard to this case? I see one person at our podium.
Yes, sir. Good evening. My name is Greg Jager. I'm an attorney with the Pasternak firm, representing Mr. Pandit and Everest Summit here this evening. The office is in the 300 block of West 3rd in Davenport. I wanted to start for just a moment and thank city staff. There's been a lot of discussion that's taken place between the time you saw the preliminary plat and the final plat this evening. I've worked with the legal department to try and prepare a development agreement that really handles the two big issues that this subdivision was causing concerns with the various regulatory bodies. The first being soil and whether there were going to be problems with sloping and soil stabilization. And the second is snow removal. Excuse me. Christine Stone has done an excellent job representing the city in getting to the point where we had an agreement. I've worked with Mr. Connors in trying to provide him additional information about the soils and the soil issues that might exist. The developer did a geotechnical survey of the ground. That information simply hadn't been transmitted to the Community Development Department. So we've done that, and coupled with their double-checking the information as the units are built, I think you're not going to have too much of a concern about soil stabilization. I also want to thank the engineering department. We met with them specifically about the snow removal issues because that was a great concern with this body as well as with the city council. The amount of right-of-way that the developer is giving to the city at this point is 67 feet, but the street itself is a standard 31-foot street. And we've agreed with the city that on the east side of Pandit Drive, we're going to put a slope in of 1 to 10. That is, for every 10 foot of extension, the slope can only be 1 foot high, which is going to provide more than 10 foot. We were estimating it was going to be 12 to 15 foot of flat ground that will hold snow along the entire length of that cul-de-sac. Now, the city had a rather large snow a couple weeks back, and along the city, in most places, the snow was able to be piled up in the area between the sidewalk and the curb, which is really only about a 4-foot patch of ground. because there are no sidewalks on the east side of Panda Drive, you've got that initial 4 foot, you've got the 4 foot that would otherwise be sidewalk, and you've got an additional 4 to 6 foot of ground. There's going to be plenty of flat ground that's going to be available to handle snow storage for this subdivision. If we have a succession of massive snow events, which has happened back in 78, 79, you're going to have a problem with snow storage everywhere in the city. But for most of the snowstorms that we're going to see in Bettendorf, the way we've configured this now, we should have more than sufficient snow storage, not only for the street, but also for the driveways. And if there are problems, as we talked about before, there is some additional snow storage in the back corner of the cul-de-sac. We don't anticipate that we will be using that routinely because we've now got all this extra ground, so much extra ground, on the other side. The last point I wanted to make as to why the developer was willing to give up the 67 feet when it's really only a 31-foot street, because the Homeowners Association is still going to be responsible for maintaining the ground on the east side of the street. That's part of the development agreement that we worked out. The reason we're doing it this way is ultimately to the city's benefit, in that initially there was some discussion about a street coming into Pandit Drive up by the cul-de-sac. By allowing the city to retain ownership of the entire parcel, if at a later date a developer to the east comes in and wants to put the street further down, it won't be a question of whether there's authority to do it. The city will own the ground, and so the city will simply say, yes, we want that street to be 40 foot further to the north, and it'll happen very easily. So I think the development agreement that was put together really protects the city as well as gives the developer some assurance that he is able to build, gives the Homeowners Association authority to control snow removal, and overall we think this is a very fair and balanced agreement with a good subdivision. The developer is here and can answer any additional questions that you may have.
Greg, in regard to the what I understood before, there's going to be some kind of HOA agreement that the snow removal on each individual driveway. So when I'm looking, Greg, at this one with the design of the buildings in front with big wide driveways here, so someone, third party, is going to be responsible for taking that snow off and moving it, because that when I look at it, is tough. You got a double set of doors, two deep, that you're going to have to go find not even one width of door to go dump it on. So that gets to be a challenge.
There will be some storage simply adjacent to the driveways, just as there are in other subdivisions. And there will be some snow storage where they will simply take it and push it across the street. Again, there's ample room for snow storage from the subdivision as well as from the street in the amount of space that we've set aside.
And staff's in agreement with that. Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the commission for the attorney or the developer? Anyone else in the audience with regard to this case? Okay, then it's back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case 15009, subject to staff recommendations.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case 15009, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. 15009 is approved. Okay, the next piece of this. 15010.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the site development plan, case 15010, subject to staff recommendations.
I'll second that also.
We're kind of balanced here. Ann did the first group. You guys are doing the other group. Okay. We have a motion and a second to approve case 15010, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 15010 is approved. And thanks to all for the hard work. I know this one has been a challenge, so.
We appreciate your direction.
The team effort, Bill. Okay, Greg.
This next one, Mr. Chairman, is dealing with a proposed development of parkland right here in this area. We've got a plat as well as a site plan. What is outlined here on the aerial photo shows the parkland in its entirety. The area that we'll be looking at will be more over toward this direction. If you were looking from Summerfield Drive in the subdivision below, you would see that this will be the phase one area for that development. The subdivision essentially begins with this being a phase one. There will be other subdividing and then other rezonings that will occur to make this all R1 zone property instead of A1 and R1. This subdivision outline here is sufficient enough to contain the site for development, and at the same time, as the developer, or I should say, as the engineers have time for the rest of the surveying of the property, they will also incorporate the 100-year floodplain from Spencer Creek further up here to the north with any other types of data that need to be shown on the plat. But for tonight's purposes, we're looking at this area outlined here in aqua, which does show the subdivision boundaries for Forest Park Drive, first edition. Also under consideration is the site plan. This is a little bit larger area being shown here, but what we're looking at is right here. There will be a pavilion. There will be also some equipment here for recreational purposes. There will also be a rec trail that will run through here, and there will be adjoining of that trail in this area. And then there is also a bioswale area here for containing stormwater, and the release of which will take place out into a ditch line that is in our right-of-way. This site plan and final plat also incorporated additional land here necessary for the right-of-way acquisition to extend Forest Grove Drive over to further to our city limits. So what we're going to have is that incorporation being already involved in this site plan and then on the plat itself. Staff, in looking at this proposal and reviewing it, felt that it met with our standards for landscaping as well as meeting our standards for the platting and other site plan considerations. Therefore, we recommend approval for both measures. I would ask, are there any questions?
Questions from the commission?
Greg, just for reference, can you show us on the aerial photo? There we go. How large is this area that we're looking at tonight? Okay. Thank you.
I've got one other procedural question. I've got two that are listed 15001 mm-hmm. in the documents. Both one's the single family residence. They're both the same. Did you see that?
Oh, the case number.
Case numbers are the same, but on the agenda it's listed as 15.
The case number, because we had the plat come in later, the case number we did issue later was 15-016, I believe.
Okay. And is there one case relative to this, or?
One case is relative to the final plat, which is the higher numbered one, 15-016, and then the site plan was the one that was originally issued, 15-001.
So they're both called site development plan, and they're both. We're looking.
So it's the final plat and the site development plan.
Mine are both called packet. Final or site
14, is it?
Yeah, I only.
In the packet.
Yeah. You guys have site development plan and final plat listed on yours? Are they both site?
The packet that I got, I didn't receive the final plat, but it's part of the online information.
So final plat is 016.
Correct.
Site plan is
001.
Okay. Got the administrator part of it. Good. Okay. All right. I see Steve, you're here. Did you want to take the opportunity to give us a little more detail on that?
Just briefly, this is the first phase of the park site out there. We're very excited about it. It's been something that's been in the works for a number of years now. The acquisition started taking place probably 5 years ago or better. We went through a process with the PV school district to negotiate an exchange of property over there to accommodate a future school site out there, and then we went through an additional process of a small exchange of property with the adjacent residential development that's going into the east, and that's going to accommodate a shared access road that you see along the right side of this first phase here. And this is a smaller portion. This is going to be more what I would call a neighborhood draw. You're not going to be seeing people drive from around the Quad Cities or even extended areas of Bettendorf to get to this site. But this is, as you know, a very rapidly growing area of the community, and I know that the residents will be very excited to start to see access to some recreational amenities up here. So we hope to start construction this summer.
Great. We've actually had a number of people coming in as cases have been presented on the area, and the common question is, when's the park coming? So I think you're going to have a lot of people happy to see that. So thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. Anyone in the audience with regard to this matter? Seeing none, I'll come back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case 15-016. It's the final plat for the Forest Grove Park First Edition.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case 15-016, the final plat. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. 15-016 is approved. And we still have the site development plan.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case 15-001. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's the site development plan for the Forest Grove Park.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case 15-001, site development plan, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 15-001 is approved. Start putting up the monkey bars, Steve.
not tomorrow, though.
There are some of us that probably remember monkey bars.
I liked them. Okay, Greg.
This, your Mr. Chairman, is the site at 18th and 53rd, 18th, and then there's 53rd Avenue that is governed by the commercial zoning that had conditions attached to it. This site originally was C2, and then it became C3 approximately 18 months back. The petitioner would like to put a business retail area in here at lot number one of Crow Ridge Plaza.
Sorry.
And the conditions that were listed as part of the zoning are shown here. I'm not going to go through and read each one of them, but they were listed originally as part of the zoning agreement that was put in place to get the conditional zoning for C3 automotive repair shop. Essentially put in here as part of this site, and one of the highlights was that no more than 6,000 square feet will be devoted to the C3 automotive repair shop use out of the entire uses, and then there are other conditions that applied as well when this went through as a zoning agreement. The petitioner's lot is essentially the last, well, it's not the last lot left undeveloped, but it is the northwestmost lot in this entire subdivision. You have the existing retail here, you have Habaneros here, and then you have a Centra Credit Union, and then you have the medical complex area over on this side, and then Red Crow and the gas station across the street. The entry, one of them will be through here, and then there will be three entryways onto the lot itself. This is the site plan showing the initial entry here, and then as you come around, there will be another entryway through here. You can enter here off of 18th, and there will be three means of access. Stormwater will be conveyed to this area here, and then there is a detention area further over here that is not shown, but that is off-site, and that's a regional detention area. The building, essentially the outline, the automotive area will be in this part, and then you'll have the remainder being some type of retail or office in this area. Staff is also aware of the conditions that were placed on the plat, and then there's a berming area shown here with these evergreens to help screen this whole complex from the residential area further to the south, and that is shown here in this area here with these evergreens. And the landscaping met the requirements all the way around when we did that evaluation on that. You see a design for the berm right here shown on this portion of the landscape plan, and then the evergreen plantings is required in looking at this site earlier. This is how the essentially the view of the building looks, what is being planned by the petitioner. And I just want to put something quickly on the overhead to show that, again, we're looking at pretty much the same structure and then also the same proposal. Essentially, the layout is the same with the berm, the trees here, and then the configuration of the building being the same as it's already been shown on the site plan. Staff, in reviewing this proposal, would ask for approval with the conditions listed in the report. I would ask, are there any questions?
So is this the final site plan approval then?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm just procedurally, I'm thinking, was it the applicant different originally? Was it Dan and now it's?
No, it's still, still Dan.
It's still Dan. But okay. Questions from the commission?
Greg, you talked about the berm and the trees, and the C3 conditions specify that the screening is in excess of the requirements of city ordinances. What I see on that drawing is a very large tree. Does the landscaping plan indicate the caliper of the trees to give us a sense of?
It doesn't, but what I did talk to the engineer about, or his firm, was that they have to have be of a certain maturity and height to begin with, and that they have to be able to reach a certain height at maturity within a short period of years. So I read them are essentially our landscape ordinance and said, okay, here are the requirements for these evergreens, that if you're going to use them for screening, here's what you have to do if they're going to be an opaque barrier.
Okay. All right. I'm sure the neighbors to the south of there will appreciate that.
And is that incorporated into the plan? Then I see a tree diagram over on the right side there. So
yeah, I mean, or is it just these are, yeah, I mean, that's okay. Part of the landscape plan. We usually require that they at least give the general name of the plant. In some instances, if the caliper happens to be of a nature where it's thicker, and we require a thicker caliper in order to meet the tree count with fewer trees, then we want that listed in there, definitely, because then the standard will be that we will hold them to is what is already in the subdivision ordinance for a general one tree count caliper type tree.
So I guess the question, what I'm hearing is, are those details articulated on these plans? Or is that just conversation that's occurred?
The details essentially are dictated by the landscape ordinance regarding the evergreens.
Okay.
That is on that plan.
Hi, Chris Townsend, Townsend Engineering. And I printed 11x17 version of this, and my eyes are not seeing the detail right now. That's what It happens when you turn 40.
Minor like they used to be either, so yeah. I totally get you.
I know. It's killing me. But anyway, those details are on there, and it's got the minimum height for these trees and all the details, specifically what has to happen there.
Okay. Great. Thanks. There's one reference on the staff recommendations that says all terms and agreements relating to ordinance number 11-13 conditional zoning to be complied with or zoning reverts back to C2. Is that including a time frame that there would needed to be development within?
It is. They need to have a permit and start construction by, I believe it's May 21st.
Okay, so, wow, we got the clock running here. Okay. Anyone else in the commission? Anyone else in the audience with regard to this case? Seeing none, I'll return to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we approve case 15-011, subject to staff recommendations.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case 15-011, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
And I'm an abstain.
And we have one abstention, if we note that for the record. 15-011 has passed. Thanks. Better start digging. Better give him a permit first. Okay, Greg.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be showing the attachments further for this report on the overhead. Essentially, we have a petitioner who is asking that we amend Section 18.10.13 of Appendix B of the Municipal Code of our zoning ordinance to include a new location as a pre-approved location in our city. And I'll go to the doc cam and we'll sort this out. The area we're looking at is the Colo Hub location, and what we've got essentially is this site right here being the current Colo Hub location, and this is the future tower site. We've got pre-existing a tower here, 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 and there. And these are all telecommunications towers. The latest one to go in was right here at the Baptist Church location. That one is 190 feet high. The petitioner is requesting a 125 foot high tower. Essentially, that's how the design will look on that tower. It'll be 125 feet high. Towers within the area right now, you already do have 190 foot here. These towers here are well over 200 feet, and those transmission towers, they're in an A1 district. The church is in an A1 district. This area here is adjoining. The difference is that this tower right here will be used to transmit high-speed internet, wireless internet, within a 2-mile radius. So it is a newer technology. The transfer rate is 40 meg, I believe. And that will be a very big step up from what we've seen in terms of competitive cable-oriented transmission for internet. So what you're seeing is a totally different product, but something that is, again, tangential to these areas here. This structure will also be required to be one of those structures that is not going to fall on the other property. It'll be a self-collapsing structure. Essentially, that's the design right there that you see that will be placed in that location. So we're looking, even though this might be a rather arid area where we're seeing these towers, it'll be a 125 foot tall tower. The area where it'll be located will be in the southwest corner of this facility. So as you're driving by, you can look up here and then see this tower location. As part of that agreement, there was a co-location agreement between ourselves and the developer of this tower that as long as there's a capacity and the weight-bearing capacity of this structure will allow, there will be permitted other telecom providers will be allowed to also locate on this particular tower. So that's part of the agreement. We wanted to make sure that that was part of this so that we don't have, again, a tower shortage within the city and that we do get coverage. So the staff in reviewing this agrees with the petitioner's request to amend our ordinance, and we would recommend approval. I would ask, are there any questions?
Questions from the commission.
So city staff doesn't have any concerns about the proximity to Devil's Glen Road?
That would be something that we would look at structurally, internally, to make sure that the tower does not collapse out onto the roadway. I don't think that, given the nature of it, the way it's designed, that that would be a problem. I believe our also are...
I think you may be saying aesthetically.
Yes, and there's a lot of dynamics to that. And there is another relatively new tower not very far away from there on the church's property, but this is a lot closer to Devil's Glen.
Right. I think, and Mr. Rubens is here, but if you look at how the Colo Hub developed around with cooling towers and generators and loading docks, there's not a lot of space on the site where they could actually put this. So I think that probably the default site, was that correct?
And there's not space to co-locate this on one of the other towers?
In our discussions, I sent him toward the AT&T tower that's on the adjacent property, and apparently they couldn't get an agreement put together.
My name is Scott Rubens. I'm the present CEO of Geneseo Communications, who owns the Colo Hub building. Mr. Connors is right. AT&T, basically the rent that would be charged on that tower, as well as the bandwidth that we're going to be using, or the spectrum we would be using, would be competing directly with them. So consequently, with that said, it was best that we build our own tower and be able to compete with our own space on our own tower, as opposed to being at the mercy of the tower owner to allow me the opportunity to co-locate on their tower.
So is this for marketing of internet services, or is it for your internal use, or both?
Now, the FCC recently auctioned off a new airways. We've all heard of LTE. This is LTE-X. This is the next generation that's specifically designed to bring anywhere between 50 to 100 megabits over the airways using cell phone technology to cell phones. I'm not a cell phone provider, but I have been able to secure the spectrum. I was the winner in parts of Illinois. I'm currently working on an agreement with the owner of the Bettendorf area to use this spectrum. Should we not be able to use this, I can use a 2.4 spectrum just the same and deliver 40 megabits to homes within a relatively short period of space, 2 miles or less.
Interesting. And this, I'll call it dimensional structure, as opposed to what we call a monopole. Is there no way to, it's aesthetically, I think it is Poleville over there. That's the reality of it. They're all over the place, but the dimensional structure seems to be a little less aesthetically pleasing, at least to me, than the monopole. Is the monopole not an option?
No, it would certainly be an option. Those are just obviously easier and quicker to put up, but I'd be happy to, if the commission wished, to put a monopole up.
I'd personally like to see something a little better aesthetically. That tends to make it, especially with the proximity to Devil's Glen. The other ones, it seems like it conforms to the spirit of the neighborhood in Poleville over there. I might have coined a term now, huh?
You do run the risk, because it's only 125 feet high, that it may not be possible then to place any more than one or two tenants on these types of poles. I'm substantially less than the pole right next to it. I'm only 125 versus two. So from that standpoint, we may have to do some engineering to adjust our agreement to allow other providers to connect to our tower.
And I'm all for the ability to spread the fixed cost over a few users if possible, but the aesthetics, I think, given the proximity to Devil's Glen in the area, it just doesn't quite look as nice as the other. But so I guess that would be my comment there.
I would agree with that. I think the truss towers look much more industrial in an area that's...
And everything else that you've done to that site has certainly been well done for the
for
area.
Sure.
There isn't anything that's happened in that development that's changed really the outward appearance of the building other than some of the mechanicals on the east side. The building's been done very well, so I think it seems reasonable to me to keep the tower in keeping with the building development.
I would agree with that, and I guess I'm kind of questioning why are we worried or trying to allow others to go on these poles if we're going to run into a situation where the rent or the ability to actually have commingling of these poles is just not going to be economical.
Well, cell providers seem to not worry about the cost as much. We've had a number of cell providers that have co-located on various towers. A lot of them, Christine, I'll let you know, are approaching the city frequently to locate on our towers, and I think we're just about maxed out at this point in time. So there is a need.
And our ordinance does say that whenever one of these new towers goes up, the owner does have to agree to co-locate where feasible.
It also would tend to reduce the number of total number of towers.
Mm-hmm. That's the idea.
Yeah.
I guess the where feasible apparently is
right.
Is the problem.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you the technology is going away from higher poles to smaller poles and more frequent. So the spectrum leads itself to not to be 120 or 190 feet high. It leads it to be more of a smaller type thing because it penetrates walls and trees very, very much, much easier than the normal cell tower. So co-locating on cell towers for the next generation of cells is probably not going to be a problem because you're not going to have the need to go up as high as you have in the past.
Okay. Anyone else in the audience with regard to this case? Any other comments from the commission? I have a motion from the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case number 15-013, subject to the staff's recommendations.
And are we going to request the focus on a unipole as part of that?
Yes.
Okay. Did I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to approve case 15-013, subject to staff recommendations with the additional request that a unipole design be investigated and as the preferred development approach. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. That is approved. Great. Thank you. Bill, does that take us to commission update?
It does, Mr. Chairman. Subsequent to your last meeting, the City Council followed your lead and your recommendation and approved the preliminary plat of the settlement at Pigeon Creek, 8th edition. I think we're making progress on the comprehensive plan. I think we might be at a place where we can move forward with the land use. I think many of you got the draft of the first half of the comprehensive plan, supposed to get the draft of the second half tomorrow, so I'll forward that on. And we're looking at maybe kind of tentatively the 26th of March having an open house where we bring the public in. And it would be get comments one last time before we have the public hearing, before the Planning and Zoning Commission, and then the City Council. Have talked to Gary Lozano, and we're going to get started very shortly here with the concurrent rewrite of the zoning ordinance to match our comprehensive plan. So we're all going to have a busy year ahead.
Looks like it. But looks like a good direction that we're heading based on what I've seen. So great. Thanks for the update. If there's nothing else for the good of the order, going once, twice, we're adjourned.
So, Bill, you're going to